Well, today on our Tech for Business podcast, Todd, our COO and CISO, and Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity and vCISO, are joining us to talk about SIEM. We do have a previous podcast I will link in the notes, but I was hoping just to start with a basic, what is it, and then why do I need it? Why am I listening to this podcast? So maybe Nate can kind of jump in and share a little bit of what it is and why I need it.
So a SIEM solution is a tool that is taking and centralizing logs throughout the environment. That's probably the most simple way of phrasing that is you're taking logs from your switches, your firewalls, the network traffic, you know, the remote agents in your environment. So laptops, desktops, you name it, whatever logs you're going to do. You can take that a little bit further to your cloud services. So can you pull in things like your Office 365 logs, G Suite logs, I think Google Workspace now, as of the last couple of years, Google Workspace logs, AWS logs, whatever you're trying to take, but putting them into some type of containerized, centralized location. So that way, if there ever is some type of security incident, you can go into one spot to correlate all the logs, to build a bigger picture of what's actually going on, rather than having to jump into each independent system. Because we do know that things like firewalls, they might only store 30 minutes logs. So you're offloading that to a different tool for longer term storage retention. That's not fully a SIEM yet. Then at that point, there's another layer on top that says, once we have those logs, can we parse it and match it to known threat patterns or the signatures, essentially? So if we see things like network scanning against the firewall or internally across the network, if people are installing malicious software, do we see alerts being generated from that tool to be able to correlate that? There's a component on top of this of saying, should you actually be responding to those alerts? That's going to be a whole nother topic later on. But then the last component of a SIEM at the most basic level is the reporting that comes off of it as well is, can you take all the logs from all the different systems and paint a picture to be able to match it to, you know, regulatory requirements, or maybe there's some type of executive report that the board wants to see at any given point. So you can take those reports, schedule them out, and have them available and ready to go.
I was going to ask quick, and this is a silly question, but is a SIEM just kind of something that sort of sits on top of all of your other pieces? Is that, in basic terms, what a SIEM is? You're going to say no. Very simple.
So, no. security is a multi-layered approach, right? Is you have your core infrastructure that just runs the business. You put on your security tools to be able to protect the business. And security obviously has multiple layers. So I'm not going to pull up different analogies about this, but you know, maybe an onion, I guess, is probably the only one I'll stick with. And so if something can make it through the first layer of the onion, again, hopefully you have a second layer until the core of that is protected. But a SIEM is just collecting logs from systems. It's not necessarily providing any type of protection. It's the reporting and the detection of security threats. So we've talked about the NIST cybersecurity framework for years at this point. If you're new to it, the concepts of it is identify. You need to know what you have before you can protect, which is the next stage. Once you actually try and protect, can you actually detect a security threat? So now we're crossing the boundary of post-security incident. That's where a SIEM sits. Is it's not doing the identification, it's not doing the protection, it's detecting and reporting.
Thank you for that clarification. Yep. Sorry, Todd, I cut you off a little bit on what it is and why we need it.
Yeah, no, I it was great. And Nate, it was very, very thorough. The only other piece I was going to add on to it is, in the event something does happen, it's also a tool set that's used for forensic responsibility. So inevitably what happens, assuming that an organization has a SIM, is the insurance company kind of wants to know what happened, how it happened, et cetera. And they say, can you pull all that information together? And this tool set allows it. So as Nate mentioned, is firewalls get a lot of data and it's hard for them to retain it, that they're really not designed for a logging system. And so when you've got the ability to put that into a centralized location, you have the ability to pull from it and do the reporting as appropriate. But other than that, extremely thorough job.
So Todd, maybe you can kind of guide us into, because we were speaking a little bit about the finance industry specifically, and the SIM came up in conjunction with compliance. And I know that there's a lot out there about needing it and using it. And can you give us a little bit of what it is in compliance terms?
Sure. Traditionally, compliance has been really designed to kind of say, does your security program do exactly what you say or think it should do? And so a lot of times an IT department or even security teams will rely very heavily on technical solutions or security controls to protect an organization. But when it comes to the compliance aspect of it, they've got a lot of check boxes that say, do you do X, Y, and Z? And that's a variety of different things. And Nate kind of covered a lot of this already, is do you have the ability to detect what's going on? And so when you look at the traditional way compliance is designed, which is heavily how you see it in the finance industry, there are some specific things that they ask you. And they in the banking industry in particular, they've got something that's referred to as the FFIEC. And I couldn't tell you what the acronym means, but we can go find it if you need it. And the FFIEC has been really designed historically to be that questionnaire, if you will. And it's nearly 500 questions of the things that you should be doing to protect your organization. And a SIM solution is designed in that traditional sense to check those boxes. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but that's really what it's doing, is it's giving you the yes, we do that to a lot of those questions that are in there. And those do get heavily into the stuff that Nate was talking about. Can I look for things such as an external threat? Can I see internal things that shouldn't be happening, data loss prevention, all those types of things? Can I consolidate all my logging? Can I normalize it? Can I add additional information from an external threat feed? Those types of things are all designed to give you the yes to the things that you should be doing. The world's changing a little bit, especially in the banking. They're starting to move away from that traditional FFIEC. But you're still seeing the request, especially from examiners, to say, do you have these checkboxes in place? And so naturally, the SIM is typically the answer to the vast majority of them. Again, oversimplifying it, I would say nearly a third of that questionnaire is answered. It's a rough number. It's not quite right, but it's a huge chunk of the questions are answered by, do you have a SIM? Does it do these things? And the answer is usually yes, if you've got one.
So when you're approaching this compliance and I need this SIM to meet potentially a third of these questions, what are you really looking for in that solution? I mean, what's going to be right for specifically banks or finance, credit unions, things like that?
Other than the checkboxes on the forms that's being required. Yeah. So some of the questions, I mean, Todd had mentioned the questions that are roughly asked, right, is, do you centralize your logging? Do you have alerts of known threat behavior, right? Checkbox. Do you correlate against third-party threat feeds? Check. They all start incorporating that type of stuff. Are you able to report this stuff to management? Check. Are you looking for new accounts or new privileged accounts being added or removed from the environment? Check. So that's why it's taking a lot of that type of data. Now, when we're talking about, is it a fit for a bank? Is there's a lot of different SIM solutions out there. I don't remember if we did a whole episode on comparing SIMs. I believe we've done an article or a blog post in the past, but there's a couple different components to it. Is pricing, is how is it priced? This is all over the board when it comes to SIM solutions. The traditional model is data consumption. So the more data you send to it, the higher your bill becomes. The challenge with that is, well, the regulators are telling me to send everything to it, so this is going to be really, really expensive, right? And so also, if you ever had a major security incident, you might be flooded with logs, so your bill is going to have some type of spike, which, again, it's not predictable to the bank. And so in those cases, we tend to also see there's something called event per second, is as the logs are filling in and it's doing its alert correlation, it can calculate how many events per second are happening. Some vendors will price based off of that rather than raw volume. And then what we've actually started seeing over the last 5 years or so is more of a per user model. Sorry, there's one in between that was per IP or per asset on your environment as well. That one's also a little bit of a challenge because numbers come and go all the time. So then the newer model to go back was the newer one that we typically see is it's predictable pricing because we know how many accounts are going to be in the environment. Because when we hire a new employee, there's obviously cost associated with that. Now you can take whatever your SIM cost per user is, just tack that onto your budget as well. So as you're doing your forecasting, we expect to grow 10%. We're going to add 10% more employees. Our SIM cost is going to go up 10% as well. With that, it's typically unlimited data consumption. So it sits very, very nice for a bank, because when the auditors comes through and say, send everything to your SIM, it's no extra cost associated with that, right? Other than the user licensing or the account licensing. And I put a caveat there because service accounts still do count typically. So, but the other considerations that organizations are looking for is on-prem versus the cloud. And so on-prem is the data never leaves your local environment. What this means is lots of storage space, because if we're saying we're going to flood this with network traffic and it could be very, very expensive if you're doing a consumption base, well, now you have to have the infrastructure to support it. So are you going to go implement a SAN with 30 terabytes of data because regulators are going to be asking for a year of retention on it? That's where we tend to see a lot of cloud-based SIM solutions where they say you have a little on-site collector, which is very, very small. It's just collecting the data and passing it up to the cloud. They will take care of the storage space for you. So that's what we typically see in the financial space is per user pricing and cloud based. And these are totally sufficient for, sorry, I'm on a Mac. So for those that are listening, you didn't hear anything, right? Those are on YouTube, got balloons kick up because I'm talking with my hands. I got to turn this thing off.
So good.
But yeah, so when we see that combination of per user and cloud auditors, I don't know if we've ever seen issues in the financial services space, right? We support plenty of them that are doing that.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, when it comes to considerations, those would be the top two for me too. There are other benefits that come with naturally with cloud. So for example, you get updates faster, so you don't have to worry about a lot of stuff that happens on-prem. When you're looking at SIM solutions, some of them include vulnerability scanners. If they don't, you need to supplement it elsewhere, which is fine. But the point here would be, if you've got an on-premise device, it's a piece of equipment or multiple pieces of equipment, and you have to update them, whether that's operating systems, hardware, et cetera. And sometimes they have vulnerabilities as well. But part two of that is when there's feature and changes, you automatically, or more often than not, automatically get them in a cloud solution, and or it's relatively easy to add them on if they're appropriate. So there are big benefits for them. You just get to decide, is this a fit or is it not? So those would be by far the biggest considerations for them. And again, I guess we kind of put the overarching over the top of it is the regulations and the examiners are going to be telling you should be doing this anyway. So that would be the overarching. Yes, we need to do it. Now, where do we go from here? And that gets into all the stuff we just covered.
We talked a little bit about its SIM solution and it's checking these boxes and it's for compliance. But as you know, IT and cybersecurity professionals, what do you consider when you look for a SIM or when you think about these solutions that are above and beyond just checking a box?
Yeah, from my perspective, there's a handful of things. I mean, there are a lot of SIM solutions out there, and I don't want to be dismissive, but largely SIM solutions are relatively equal. There are things that set them apart. As Nate mentioned, to me, the pricing structure is a huge differentiator to me. just because I want it to be predictable. I don't want to deal with the, oh, I'm running out of space. I need to flex up and down and whatever. So to me, that is a huge win for me. But there are some other things that go into it as well. And it does largely depend on the organization. Most organizations, for example, they do not usually have a large security team. And we're working mainly in the SMB space. So that's where that caveat comes from, is that group more often than not does not have a large security team. And the SIEM solution does generate a fair amount of information. I mean, it's really what it's designed to do, which, again, I guess this is a good thing to kind of circle back to, is it does make life easier for those security individuals. Had you had the requirement to go back and look at firewall logs and server logs and you name it, you got to look at it. It's impossible. Each one of those things is a full-time position, whereas if you've got a SIEM solution, it helps you automate that process. But where I was going with this is your security team tends to get potentially pulled in with it. So there are solutions out there that come from, whether it's a provider like CIT or others, they'll typically add a layer of SOC, which is Security Operations Center, in as well to take some of the alerts so your team doesn't get fatigued with them. And as I mentioned, there's a lot of information, a lot of alerts. So that may be a deciding factor too, is can they supplement with a SOC that would be much less expensive than trying to maintain it as yourself. If you are an organization that is required to monitor your logs 24/7, which if you're getting the tool, one of the requirements from the regulator's perspective is you need to monitor it live, which doesn't specify specifically 24/7, but if it's live, it's live. It's 24/7. So if you're trying to do that, that typically takes, on average, they say it takes about 7 individuals to handle that. So that cost can be pretty big for a lot of organizations.
Yeah, Todd said that much nicer than me. I'll be pretty candid. A SIEM solution, from coming from a security professional, do I like them? Not really. They're kind of the necessary evil, right? It hits a lot of the checkbox. They do their purpose, and they do it well because they've been around so long. Again, I'm going to kind of go back to the NIST cybersecurity framework. Identify, protect, you draw a line in the middle. All of that was pre-security incident. Everything after that is post-security incident, right? Does detect, respond, recover. I'm trying to not have a security incident in the first place. And so most of the stuff that we're trying to help customers with is identify and protect. We spend a lot of time educating and putting in tool sets to help you never have a security incident in the first place. So when you do get one,
so
it breaks my heart at first, right? But then that's when we jump into those tools, obviously, and start digging through the logs to figure out, you know, what happened, what was the preventative issues that failed leading up to that incident. So the tools are great, but there's also a triad that you have to think about: the people, the process, technology. The SIEM solution is just one corner of that triangle, right? You still have to have the strong, the people, the technical whereabouts of them, the passion to look at 500 alerts in a single day. This the spot that I started my security journey. It sucks. and then the process of saying, how do I correlate this? How do I, you know, build a bigger picture and a storyline and in the incident response process? So the tool is such a subcomponent of the actual incident response component of it. But yes, from a security professional, I'm focusing way further up the kill chain on this.
So
but you still have to have it. And we still have them, right? We run a couple different SIEM solutions here at CIT as well. So,
I agree. I mean, where I would put all of the time, energy, et cetera, or most of the time energy is on that pre-event phase. So I'm trying to stop it from ever happening. That is more important to me than. I mean, it's important to recover, but I'm trying to stop it to happen. That's the whole point of cybersecurity. And then, unfortunately, you still need to have all the detection tools there as well, which, again, gets back to the SIEM. So love it, hate it, may call it a checkbox, but the reality is you still need the tool, unfortunately.
And there is some, I don't have an official stat or a resource because I've looked at this in the past. So back in, I believe it was 2017, the average response time to identifying that you actually had a security incident in your environment was around 116 days, if I remember correctly. once regulators, insurance, everyone started mandating to put these tools in place, the detection time has dropped down to, last I looked at it, it was like 14 days. So it's clearly helping businesses identify active security threats in their environment, even if they did have a preventative failure along the way, which means less impact to your business, right? You know, maybe there's less reputational damage, less, you know, when you have a security incident. One of the concerns is, did someone get into my backups, and is my last backup safe to actually restore to? So if in 2017, it might've been 117 days before someone got into your environment, are you comfortable rolling back 6 months of your business data to hopefully that it's clean rather than 2 weeks? So there is a value to the tools, even though I kind of slightly diminished it saying I still don't like them. Right.
I agree. I did want to circle back real briefly when we were talking about how do you decide what tool you want to use. And there are some other caveats too. So more often than not, we'll typically see a customer in that small business space just say, please take it off my hands. I don't want to have to deal with it. And some of those tools, even though they've got a security operations center, they still send you all of the alerts. And so ultimately, you as the company that owns the tool, you own the risk. That means that you have to look at the alerts and say, does this mean something to me? There are organizations out there that will go through the process and do a lot more for you. So, for example, there are solutions, and I try not to get too terribly sales pitchy, but I'll use a CIT in this particular instance to kind of show what you could have. Is they will go through all the level one alerts. That's the, hey, a new user logged in, a user got locked out, someone's pinging my firewall, all of those types of things, and just kind of take care of it for you. And then they can supplement it with another layer on top of it, which I'll refer to as layer two, where they will do the deeper dive that says, this is normal, a person just locked themselves out. I can see they're on premise, da, 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 da. We'll just move on. However, if there's something that's fairly serious that goes, that's not normal, someone just reset their multi-factor authentication, they will reach out to the customer or the organization and say, this is what's happening, this is what it means, and here's what I think the next steps are. And that's a lot different. It takes all that burden off of an organization. So those may be considerations as you're going through it. You might find a provider you're like, that's great, they just took it from me, I don't have to worry about it. But the reality is, it's really not giving you everything you were expecting. And all things being equal, there might be a differentiator there for an organization to help them make that decision.
For sure. So I know that we mentioned the importance and heavy attention to the prepare and prevent. We see a lot of those types of tools evolving rapidly. What do you think these SIEM solutions will be like in 5 years? Are they going to be the same? Are they going to just be doing the same thing? Or do you see them evolving and changing?
Definitely evolving. We already see vendors doing that today. So a lot of these vendors have started to bring in what they call SOAR, orchestration. I'm not going to pull up the full-on acronym, just like
autonomous response.
Yeah, thank you. Autonomous response, basically. So basically what you're saying is, and we've seen this in, you know, even some of the other vendors for quite some time, but the furthering of it, essentially. So essentially the SIEM solutions historically have never taken action on anything. They just say, hey, by the way, there's a security incident, be aware of it, go do something about it, right? You might still have active, you know, ransomware sweeping across the network and it's going to light up like a Christmas tree, but there's nothing stopping it or slowing it down. What we've seen over the last probably 5 years prior to today was the introduction of the SOAR concept to say, okay, when we see an alert, can we take some type of action on it? Is maybe we have an agent on that device that we can say, okay, start pulling the security logs off the device. Then we started seeing things such as, okay, maybe isolate that device if it had a security threat on it. People were developing custom scripts to say, if there's an IP that's always hitting your firewall, log into the firewall and add it to a block list, right? Those are the very basic components of it. What we're starting to see transition already is saying, can I develop custom playbooks that meet more the business needs rather than pre-built integrations to say, and they're complex workflows as well. So you could say, in this event, go take these 15 actions with all your if and statements to build out the flow chart essentially. But when this alert happens, build out that entire flow chart. And integrations with things such as, well, go do custom API calls into Teams or Slack. So someone gets immediate notification and says, do you want to do something with this? And you can hit a yes or a no, right? We see this with things like dynamic team cards. And so now what you're doing is you're bringing those alerts and the actions to where your IT and security people are sitting in a day in, day out, with allowing the tool to take the immediate response to it. So you've probably seen the phrases like next gen SIM for a long time right now. I think the vendors are all trying to get away from next gen because it's been next gen for 5 years. So we'll see what happens further after that. But
next gen.
Yeah, next gen. But really what we're seeing is just you're taking the whole concept of like XDR from the MDR, right? It was EDR, then you put layers of management on top of it, then it turned into MDR, and then they integrated with third-party services. It turned into XDR for extended coverage with third parties. We're seeing the same thing with a SIM, but now the SIM can interact with the EDR, XDR stacks, and now it's turning into one giant holistic monitoring. And so I think we'll start to see some of the tools actually blend together with a lot of the consolidation of efforts.
Yeah, it's hard to say when it'll happen. As Nate mentioned, it is happening already. But I will say SIM has been pretty slow to evolve. I don't even know when the first SIM started, but it really isn't dynamically different now from when it was. So when you're talking next gen, the vast majority of the next gen was going to the cloud and integrating with Office or Google is kind of where you've seen the big, woo, here comes the next gen. It will absolutely change. I mean, they're already getting to a point. I mean, if you asked me about it, it's a required tool. It does have its place. There are good values for it, but it's kind of a legacy technology. It really isn't adapting. So if it was me and I said, what would the world perfectly look like? It would be more one that does get all that SOAR capabilities and it would just be automatically included. Historically, SOAR has been an add-on and it's been extremely expensive, but you're starting to see a change. And just to kind of give another idea of stuff that I expect to keep coming down the path is IBM had their version is called QRadar and they were using Watson as the AI component of it. I don't really think they ever realized what they wanted to do with that, but I do see AI being something coming up in the future where when I talked about the SIMs make a lot of noise and alerts, AI could handle a big chunk of that. But like I said, if you're getting alerts that an individual locked out because it came after a long weekend or when they were on PTO, AI should be able to go, that's pretty normal. Mm-hmm. We would expect that to happen, right? So things like that, you would be able to kind of start to see that come into the fruition of it in the future. But the autonomous response is really where the tool needs to evolve. And there are some things out in the market that are similar to doing it. But what it exactly looks like, I'm not entirely sure. I can't say SIM is dead because it's not. It's an incredible, powerful tool. It does need to be in place. But at some point, there will be a fairly dramatic evolution. And I would guess it would happen within the next 5 years. But it's hard to look at that. I'm not in the development cycle of a SIM, so I don't really know what that would be. And when I said IBM had, I think IBM sold off QRadar, if I remember correctly.
I don't remember what. Well, you're probably looking that up. But I do fully agree that AI is going to become more of a component to it. We've already seen this more machine learning, I'd say, AI is the user experience. Machine learning is the actual tech backend. So we'll just set that clear here real quick. So when I talk about ML or AI, it's the same thing for the most part. So we've already seen this in other SIM solutions. So And where it's typically been used is when an alert gets generated, it'll say, here's all the other devices in your environment that have had similar connections to this. And here's the list of the devices. Here's the frequency that they've been connecting to it. And maybe here's the duration of how long we've seen this type of activity. So we've seen that now for probably 2 or 3 years. But where it's going to get really, really powerful, and we do see some of this already coming in. So I know SentinelOne has their purple AI that they just introduced. But what you can do within some of those tools today, which I think will get further and further deeper integrated into the other SIEM solutions as AI becomes more affordable, is being able to say, show me any instance of ATP-29, which is Russia's threat acting group, and go do threat hunting throughout all the logs that I've seen in my environment. And it'll be able to parse through that data, give you a result within seconds that says, I see these 5 devices with these indicators of compromise. Again, all that third-party threat feed data. And you can get very, very quick threat hunting capabilities done in seconds. And then maybe even actually orchestrate it, right? Is because we're talking about the SIEMs and the banks. If you're subscribed to some type of like the FISAC with all the banking threat feed data, and they send you some type of TLP alert, do I see any indications of any of these indicators or compromises in my environment? Boom. No, you're good. Okay, I don't need to be worried about it. Moving on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just real briefly circling back, IBM did sell and they sold it to Palo Alto, which maybe there's a trend here as you're seeing this evolution, and maybe this will accelerate it as AT&T just sold off their SIEM solution to Blue Light.
Yeah, WillJam Ventures and AT&T did a joint venture, and it's now Level Blue.
Oh, there's, yeah. So you are starting to see the change, and Palo Alto is trying to use their AI to kind of elevate it to the next level. So maybe that is a lot closer than we thought it was. TLP, in case anybody doesn't know, is the traffic light protocol. That's the alerting you get on how important it is, et cetera. So
thanks. I feel like if you've made it this far in the podcast, you probably knew what that was. I did not.
I think everyone dropped when I get on my soapbox about not liking SIEMs, but so thanks if you stuck around through that. So,
oh my gosh. Perfect. Well, it'll be exciting to see sort of where this tool is, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years from now, especially after this conversation. It'll be cool to see. But thank you so much, Todd and Nate, for joining us today. If you want to know more about SIEM solutions or you want to speak to anyone on this podcast, please reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all new episode.